Today is May 8th, 2013, and this is episode number 203 of the Apple Context Machine, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, managing editor for TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin, and apparently this week I don't have a job. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/ACM. And if you would like to comment on or question, I got through it. Of course, I then stopped myself by padding. Anyway, shoot us a note at acm@macobserver.com.
Oh, I shouldn't have laughed at you saying, and apparently this week I don't have a job, because there's probably a few people that were like, oh, they fired Brian?
Probably not. You'd probably be like, oh, thank God, we're finally going to get rid of this guy.
No, I think everyone loves you.
No, maybe. Maybe. No, I didn't come up with a title. I forgot to do that.
Yeah, I just came up with Bouffant Inspector, and it's just...
Ooh, that's good. Oh, that's good.
You like it?
I want to be a Bouffant Inspector.
Well, okay, just do the first line again, where you say your name, I tell you.
And I'm Brian Chaffin, a Bouffant Inspector.
There you go. And now we'll just edit it back right at the beginning there, and excellent. No one will ever know.
No one will ever know. Bouffant, that's a killer title, in my opinion.
Well,
Bouffant Inspector.
All right. The next time we need to order new business cards for you, that's what's going on.
Anyway.
The great thing is, I bet we could get all the way through CES without anyone asking why it says Bouffant Inspector on your cards.
Absolutely. But at the same time, we get questioned the first day of Macworld.
Oh, absolutely.
I'm not just saying that flippantly.
Oh, I know. That's the difference between the people that are at CES and Macworld.
Well, the environment, because sometimes it's even the same people.
That's a good point. CES. Yes, it is the environment. Yeah.
It's the environment. Nonetheless, you know what I really enjoyed this last week, this week, was Defiance, the episode of Defiance that we talked about. Not we didn't talk about the episode, but we talked about the show.
Yes, we talked about the show that puts you on tilt, because they talk about terraforming Earth.
Earth, right. Right. They're still doing that. It's still wrong. It still makes me annoyed as can be, and gets my nerd peak up. Does that, right?
That could have gone so horribly wrong. So we'll just run with it, nerd peak.
Okay, excellent. And but the show gets stronger. I think we just saw the fourth episode, or the fourth or fifth, one of the two, and it just keeps getting stronger. It's a great show. If you haven't checked it out, it's on the Sci-Fi Channel. I like it.
And since I don't have the Sci-Fi Channel, I'll just live vicariously through you on that show. And I will continue to enjoy every episode of Doctor Who.
Right. Which I am also doing, although I missed this week's.
Yes. And you have no idea how difficult it is for me to not want to try and talk to you about the episode anyhow.
Well, I can't wait to see it. And I do have some past episodes on my DVR to catch up on, too. So it's fun. It's fun catching up on a show that has such a rich history. It's fun knowing just how much stuff is out there for me to see still.
Oh yeah, there are quite literally gobs of episodes.
Gobs, yeah. Speaking of gobs, I took off my glasses just now so that they don't constantly ding the microphone, which seems to have been the case in recent episodes. So I can't see all that well.
Oh, okay. And I haven't figured out how it fits with gobs, but that's okay. I'm just going to run with it.
All right. Well, let's get to what our show is supposed to be about, which is the Apple Context.
Oh, mission. Right.
Yeah. Which one do you want to go with? I can roll dice if you need me to.
Yeah, let's roll dice.
I have the dice. I will roll. Let's do percentages this time.
I just love that you keep dice on your desk.
Well, they were in a drawer.
Yeah, well,
to be fair.
At your desk. In a drawer at your desk, you have dice.
So let's say 50% and below
is Adobe.
And then 51% above will be the Apple narrative.
Awesome.
We are at 31%. So we're going to talk about Creative Cloud first.
All right. Well, then, for those of you that haven't been keeping up on what's happening with Adobe, they announced a couple days ago the next version of all of their professional apps. That would be Photoshop and InDesign and Illustrator and Dreamweaver and Premiere and on and on ad nauseum.
So it's CS7, right? Creative Suite 7?
Oh, if only.
So, what? It's not?
I know. Big shock here. Okay, so the deal is, instead of having Creative Suite 7 to follow Creative Suite 6, Adobe is dropping their perpetual license model and going with just Creative Cloud.
Now, when you say perpetual license model, you mean?
I mean like what we've known for decades, where you pay once for the software,
mm-hmm.
you have that version,
mm-hmm.
and that's it.
And I can use it as long as my computer will support it.
Right. And if you want to have a newer version at some point, you now pay for that new version.
Right. So if I've got, say, Creative Suite 4, and I want to upgrade to Creative Suite 5, I do so, and I'm done.
Right.
And so, speaking more realistic, let's look at the prices and what that actually means. So, what is the new model?
Okay, so the new model was introduced last year alongside Creative Suite 6. So we had our perpetual license model and a subscription model. Now, with the subscription model, you get everything Adobe makes, and it costs you $49 a month.
Month in, month out.
Right.
Now, is it $49
or $49.95? Actually, I think it's $49.99.
$99. Okay, got to get those extra 4 cents. That's good.
That's right.
So $50 a month gets access to Photoshop.
Right.
Dreamweaver.
Right.
Illustrator.
Right.
InDesign.
Right.
Premiere.
Mm-hmm.
Acrobat.
Mm-hmm.
Flash.
Yep.
Anything else?
It's actually a pretty long list of applications.
And Lightroom?
Lightroom is separate.
Lightroom is separate?
So, well, you know, I'll have to double check on that because you can still get Lightroom separately. So, it may be. See, here's the problem. There's so many applications. I can't keep track of what all is included.
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah.
All right, so you get a big long list of everything, and of course, very few people need everything.
Right. Now, along with that big long list of everything, you also get 20 gigs of online storage space. You get full access to Typekit, which...
20 gigs. 20 gigs is nothing. Give me a break. 20 gigs is nothing.
Well...
No, especially if you're dealing with music files, because there's their music app is in there, too. Their production.
Yes.
If you're dealing with music files and you're dealing with our music projects and you're dealing with major video editing projects, let alone huge print projects, 20 gigs is an FU is what that is.
Yes. My guess is that Adobe's looking at it as if with that storage space, you're not going to put your video and audio projects up there because you're going to be working on them from a local storage. So, yeah. But you're right. For someone that's doing really big professional projects, that's not a lot of space.
Nope.
So, yeah.
So it's $50 a month. You get access to everything. And... we no longer have the option of buying the perpetual license.
If you want to buy Creative Suite 6, you will still be able to buy a perpetual license for that. But you are now frozen at Creative Suite 6,
And even that will go away at some point.
Yes, and even that will go away at some point. Adobe will not be adding any new features to Creative Suite 6. They will offer maintenance updates, like if they find big security problems or compatibility issues or you know, the bugs where they just they're compelled.
They will theoretically offer maintenance updates.
Based on the way they have handled previous versions, they will offer maintenance updates. Don't expect a lot.
Well, you know, the funny thing is that this whole situation to me completely decouples them from any incentive to continue to do the same release cycles, the same maintenance cycles.
You know, it's kind of funny you should say this decouples them from the same release cycles, because I think that's actually a big thing here. My feeling is, and no one at Adobe is saying anything about this to me. It's just based on how long I've been in the graphic design world and dealt with Adobe and Quark and all the other players. I think part of what they're doing here is killing the upgrade cycle that they gave us. And they gave us an upgrade cycle so that we could budget. And so,
well, they gave us an upgrade cycle because they were looking for a way to perpetuate their revenues.
Well,
that's why they gave us an upgrade cycle.
You know, on that one, I'm going to disagree with you, because they've always been doing upgrades. The problem was there was no way for creative professionals to plan for what was coming. And it would just be out of the blue, okay, now we have a new version. And there was no set time frame. So we ended up with people that were so out of cycle with versions that it had become unmanageable. And for Adobe, it was unmanageable, because at all these departments that were creating software without any set schedule. So how do you schedule a major release when everyone's just kind of doing whatever they want? So by going to the 18-month cycle that they gave us, it gave them the ability to take control over upgrade cycles, and it gave their users the ability to actually plan. And so if you knew that every 18 months there was a major release, you could figure out if every 18 months you're buying a new version, or if you're going to skip a version, okay, now you know how long you need to budget for that next version after that.
Right, fair enough, and quite frankly, I'm not going to argue with you when it comes to this industry, because you are the man.
Now, but what you just said totally fits for what they're doing now. They're actually throwing out all the hard work they did to create a cycle we could all anticipate and plan for.
And that cycle was, by the way, a major new release every 18 months.
Every 18 months.
And not every app was updated.
Well, see, that became part of the problem, because they weren't they started doing interim updates because they realized, oh, we have a bunch of new features that we really should have out there. So how do we address that? Okay, so they started doing interim updates, which meant that some applications were getting an update and others weren't. And they created a problem that they are not doing anything to fix right now, which is making InDesign, their professional page layout application, appear as if it's a redheaded stepchild. And considering I'm a redhead, it's okay for me to say that. So now we're back to where we were, where there is no cycle.
Well, I think it's going to be even more. I think it's going to be even more disgusting than that, to be honest. I think that what's going to happen within a year or two, assuming they don't get so much pushback that they reintroduce perpetual licensing, on that assumption, within a year or two, we are going to hear about the joys of stability and about how Adobe has discovered or Adobe customers have let the company know how fantastic it is to know that they can count on what they have. In other words, stop updating the applications as often. Because now they've got the subscription, they've got your money, they don't care.
I think what they're going to do is just trickle out features. And this whole notion of seeing major updates with major new features just isn't going to happen. It'll just be this ongoing, oh, I can do this new thing with sharpening now. Oh, okay. And I see a lot of problems with this, actually.
Yeah, especially with the creative world. I mean, you know, the creative world tends to find a thing that works and stick with it.
Right, because you have a workflow, you have deadlines, and you don't want things breaking. And actually, this has been a problem, I think, over the past year with Creative Cloud, because one of the features that they've touted is that you get all the new features, the latest and greatest, and it just goes out to you, and you don't have to worry about it. And so you're always getting new things before everyone else. All right.
Well, that's no good for the creative world.
No, because in many cases, what gets pushed out, all right, to be fair, in some cases, what gets pushed out will break plugins, extensions, or other add-ons that you're using with your creative or production workflow.
Right.
What that has done is created a situation where you get people going in and shutting off the updates. So they're actually freezing their Creative Suite apps, right, at a point in time, which is contradictory to what Adobe is touting as a great feature for the whole Creative Cloud thing. It also means now, instead of having everyone always up to date with the same version of Creative Suite apps for compatibility, you now have people scattered all across the spectrum with various versions. If this sounds familiar to anyone in the graphic design world, it's because it should. That's exactly how we were already operating. You'd get people that would stick with Creative Suite 4, or Creative Suite 5, or you know, whatever version they had, because they had all the plugins and extensions working exactly the way they needed.
Right. And it's a well-known industry fact, or well-known, whatever. It's a reality that Adobe's customers tended to skip a version.
Right.
And that, of course, is a problem for Adobe shareholders. Adobe's management wants Adobe's customers to upgrade to every new version in order to please Adobe shareholders. And that's really that's my problem here. So we've got to mention, by the way, that the Creative Cloud licensing model, the rental model, was introduced with CSX.
No, we mentioned that. It's just that I've already pumped so much information in your head that you're full.
Okay, I don't think we did, but that's okay. Let's assume we did.
Okay.
And so now we've hammered home that point. And when I go through and mix this, I'll just edit whichever mistake out.
Perfect.
Excellent. So this, by forcing everyone to the rental model, Adobe has embraced a solution that solves their problems.
It solves predominantly their problems. It also does address problems for many of their users. And herein lies another problem. Because for many people, Creative Cloud actually is a good option. And not only a good option, but the best option.
Yeah, we should
option.
Probably run through that math.
So, yeah. Okay, so if you look at what it costs to purchase the Master Suite and then look at what it would cost to do the every other year upgrade, in that first 3-year window, Creative Cloud saves you on the order of about $1,000.
That's if you're upgrading, how long?
Okay, so let's say you're new to the Adobe programs, meaning you just need to buy everything to get started.
Right.
So you buy the Master Collection because it's the best deal for you to get all the apps that you need. And then you skip a year, and the following year you upgrade to whatever the latest version is. So,
which not all their customers do.
Right. I'd say that's kind of a common setup for serious professional designers and actually, if you go into production on that end, you have to upgrade every year. Period.
I see.
Because you're some at least some of your customers are, therefore you have to.
I see.
So going with a 3-year cycle, I think works out to be an okay average. And so in that case, for that first 3-year cycle, you save about $1,000. And then after that, you don't save quite as much money, but you're still saving money every year, assuming that you would stay on that same upgrade cycle.
Right.
And you still will save money. Let's say you were a Creative Suite web and design user or a Creative Suite production user. So that would cover everyone that's doing web and print and video and audio between those packages.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, those are gone in Creative Cloud. Just
not the software, just the
just those packages. Yeah, your
options. You either get one app for $20 a month,
right, or you get access to everything for $50 a month.
And this is where I will say that I think it is a major mistake for Adobe not to offer us two apps for $30 a month and three apps for $40 a month. I think that graduated cycle would put the software in the range of people in a way that makes more sense for more people.
You know, I would like to see numbers from Adobe, and of course they won't show them to me. So without seeing any numbers, I could see Adobe, if there's enough pushback from users, offering a 2-app package, but I don't see them offering anything else between that and the full collection.
I don't either, mainly because they seem to stumble from one disastrous mistake to another in many regards. Strategically, you know, it's funny. I like Adobe products, but from a strategic standpoint, I believe the company has been stumbling for a long time. Going back to their decisions to GIMP the Mac versions of their software in order to make them compatible with the Windows versions.
See, that was a horrible move. And
it was a horrible move and a horrible attitude. Yes. and a really bad direction. And their attitude about the Mac platform was so bad for so long. I guess I apparently am still carrying some ill will from that.
You know, the problem with that Adobe era was that instead of doing their gamble internally, like keeping the gamble they were doing to themselves, they're very open about it and very arrogant about it. And what the gamble was that, yeah, we know Mac users make up the majority of our sales, but we think the Mac is going to fail, and therefore we're going to throw our weight behind Windows because clearly Microsoft is going to destroy the Macintosh.
And they hired a bunch of Windows/Microsoft-centric executives to make that happen, and it just sort of perpetuated the attitude.
Right. So then we get this animosity.
And this was, let's be fair too, this was 10, 12 years ago?
Yeah, this is not fresh history.
Correct.
So now we have this animosity, and then it turns out that the Mac isn't going away, and the Mac is going to stay a dominant player in the graphic design world. And it just ended up becoming this problem where Adobe now looked like a bunch of jerks, and they didn't need to. I can totally understand trying to plan appropriately for what they thought the future was going to be from a financial standpoint. That's fine. Yes. Just don't be jerks to your users about it. That's a lesson they should have learned from Quark.
Right. Absolutely. And then, of course, there's the whole Flash debacle.
Mm-hmm.
Where, you know, I mean, I'm not just talking about Steve Jobs' rejection of Flash, which, by the way, was proven to be accurate, but that's not even what I'm talking about. I'm talking about their decision to try to make Flash all things for, you know, for all possible uses, and you know, the result is that it's Swiss cheese. It's, you know, it's so many security problems and just so many issues with Flash, and I mean it all of this stuff that we're talking about, and I guess this is the point I'm trying to make, all of the stuff that we're talking about is symptomatic of a company that makes its decisions based upon what's best for the company rather than trying to provide solutions for customers. And that's my problem with Adobe in a nutshell.
Yeah, you know, and there's so many things that I think Adobe does really well, and then there's things they do that just frustrate the crap out of me. And one of those things...
Photoshop is an amazing piece of software, for instance.
Yeah, Photoshop is absolutely amazing. Absolutely. And, I mean, it does so much, and it is so powerful. There's no one person that can say they know everything the application does.
Right. And yet that doesn't make the app bad. Like, that's also true for Word, for Microsoft Word. But the reality is that with Microsoft Word, it's a bloated behemoth that all those things that no one knows how to do everything make it combine to make the app, well, I'm being repetitive, but feel bloated. Photoshop to me does not feel bloated, and I can, I don't know, what would you say, maybe I can use 10 or 20% of it at best, probably 10.
Yeah, and that's actually pretty much average. Even a lot of power users, they're not using more than 25% of the app.
Yeah, exactly. But it doesn't feel bloated.
No. If you dig deep enough, and if you're using, well, if you're using enough of it, then it's not bloated by definition. But if you dig deep enough, it can be overwhelming to the point that to many people it will feel bloated. But the reality is these features that Adobe keeps adding are to Photoshop are features that people want.
Mm-hmm.
And at some point, it becomes so overwhelming that you need to figure out something else to keep people from just being crushed from all these features. And that's why they came up with Photoshop Elements.
Yeah, Photoshop is a professional app and should not be confused for a consumer app. And I think that a lot of times people who complain about the complexity of Photoshop have done just that. They've confused their own needs, which are at a consumer level, as professional needs, or they've confused this professional app as an app that should be well suited for consumer uses, and that's not the case.
Right. And you know, and the reality is, I think that for probably, I was going to say 90%, but I'm going to be generous and say for 85% of the people that are using Photoshop, they would be better suited by switching to Photoshop Elements.
85%? Really? You think that high?
Oh, yeah. I think most of the people that are using Photoshop are using it simply because that's what was available and not because it was the right tool for them. And the subset of features that are available in Elements are the features that they're actually using all the time.
I see.
And
you think I should be on Elements?
You know, really, we could probably both be on Elements. Even as much as I use Photoshop, I bet everything I could do from Elements.
It's an integral part of my workflow.
Yeah.
And you've taught me, I mean, just heaps and heaps of things.
Yeah.
To do with it. And yet I know that I'm at about 10%.
And yeah, and we will both continue to use Photoshop because that's the tool we know.
Right. Nonetheless, that is an example. Photoshop is a really, really good piece of software. Of course, the flip side of that is that Go Live became an inferior piece of software, even as it gained more features under Adobe's care, until, of course, they eventually killed it off.
Yeah. Oh, man, see, my heart still breaks for that, because I remember when it was Go Live Cyber Studio,
mm-hmm.
and it was, hands down, the single coolest web design tool ever made.
Yeah, it was just actually one of the coolest pieces of software.
Yeah, I mean, it was so brilliant. And then Adobe bought it, and my first thought was, oh, well, I'm going to miss Go Live Cyber Studio. And then they renamed it to just Go Live. And then
they proceeded to GIMP it so that it would work on Windows.
Yeah. And that's just a tragic, sad loss.
Yeah, it really is. So, but you know, I have to say that Photoshop is so good that it makes up for Go Live. And it hurts me to say that because I am so verklempt about Go Live.
Yeah.
But it's true. Photoshop is a great piece of software.
Photoshop is great. I love InDesign.
Yeah, and I don't use InDesign, but that's what I would go straight to that if I needed to go back to paper, to print. I was a PageMaker guy.
Ah, yeah,
back, the good old days. Back in the day, yeah.
Yeah. I remember.
But I would go straight to InDesign if I needed to try to do something for print. Illustrator is voodoo to me. To me, anyone who can do voodoo should probably be burned at the stake. Anybody that can do Illustrator should be burned at the stake as a witch, because I'm not an artist. I can't draw to save my life, and Illustrator just freaks me out. I just don't know what I have no idea what to do with that thing.
That's okay. I think a lot of people that use it all the time don't know what to make of it either, because it's a confusing application. And I'm not talking about what tools do you use, how do you find stuff in the interface. It's that it's this very powerful vector image editing program that keeps getting more and more page layout features.
Oh, I see.
And people for years, even before it was getting more page layout features, were using it in lieu of Quark Express or Adobe InDesign. Hmm. As a page layout tool. And so, it is not that. And there are people out there that will argue with me, and I will take that fight on, because I am right and they are wrong. It's not a page layout program.
But despite that, is Illustrator a good piece of software?
Illustrator is a very good, very powerful piece of software. And for me, it's also very frustrating. But yeah, it's a very good piece of software.
Now, Acrobat is...
That frustrates the living crap out of me.
Very capable, but it's very capable in a bloated kind of way.
It's very capable in a bloated and the coders don't like Mac kind of way.
Yes. Yes, it does feel like it feels like a Windows program.
It is a Windows program.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, that's it.
It's a Windows program.
Which is one reason why we love the folks at Smile.
Yeah.
For PDF Pen Pro.
You know, okay, yeah, that's a really good point.
God, here I am sponsoring us this week.
Yeah, they'd be getting the money's worth.
Smile.
We love those guys. Yeah.
I had a jingle for them, didn't I?
You did. You did. Okay, that's actually pretty telling about Acrobat. When here I am, someone that's been in the graphic design world for as long as I have been dealing with PDF since it was a form of voodoo. And when I need to do anything with PDF, I don't launch Acrobat Pro. Nope. I launch PDF Pen Pro.
Yeah. Yeah. Likewise. So likewise. I remember the jingle.
Oh, do the jingle.
It was, and this doesn't even apply anymore because they changed their name to Smile Software, but it used to be Smile on my Mac. And so my jingle went to the effect of, Smile on my Mac puts a smile on my Mac. Smile. Except I think I actually used to sing it in tune.
I had forgotten that. I remember now when you came up with that jingle. And I remember we had a talk about whether or not you could actually sell it to Smile, and we both laughed. But I really like it.
And then they changed their name because they heard that.
Yeah. Well, you know, that was the most polite way they could think of to tell you they didn't want to buy the jingle. They actually changed the name of their company. That tells you how nice the Smile people are.
Exactly. Exactly. PDF Pen Pro is just a great piece of software.
It is.
So, all right. So here, our point was this, that Adobe does some things right, and they have some amazing software. I don't use Premiere. I know it's a good piece of software because
it's actually really cool.
It keeps substantial market share. So clearly, I'm guessing it's a good piece of software. I haven't used their soundtrack oriented software either. I'd be really surprised if it could hold its own with Logic or Pro Tools, but
depending on your needs, it does some stuff really well. Well, like any of the other pro audio editing tools, for some people it's the right tool. For others, not so much.
Yeah, especially if you're in a Premiere workflow, I'm sure.
Yeah. Oh yeah, because it integrates so well with Premiere and After Effects. Oh, and by the way, After Effects,
right?
Holy crap, that is amazingly cool. Some of the stuff that they did with the version of After Effects that will roll out in June as part of the new Creative Cloud. All you other guys that are making products to compete with After Effects, it's time to put on your big boy pants or go home. Because they did some really cool stuff there.
So they do all these things well that we do like, mainly on the software side. It's the strategy side where
they stumble.
Yeah, often they stumble, in my opinion.
You know, the whole Creative Cloud thing, when they introduced it with Creative Suite 6, I saw a lot of resistance. But I also saw a lot of people running the math for their own needs and realizing it was a better and more economical deal for them. And so Creative Cloud in and of itself, this is not a bad thing. The problem is that Adobe, I think, started running with it too fast. What they needed to do was give us more time to adjust to this notion that it's okay to pay a maintenance use, a rental fee, a subscription fee, whatever you want to call it, that it's okay to do that for our software, and that we're not going to get screwed in some way. And they didn't do that. What they did was they just jammed it down our throats right away, and there's a lot of people that are still very leery of this, and as such, now people are just flipping out. And they're certain that Adobe's sole purpose is to screw us. Well, Adobe's purpose is to make money. They're a corporation. They have shareholders. But they can do it by being nice to us with the good products they sell us.
Right. They can do it the way Apple does it, which is to try to make solutions that people want. And they've confused that. And they have gravitated towards a solution that works for them. And I understand the math. I understand that especially if you upgrade to every new version, Creative Cloud is a bargain.
Yes, and for say production houses or print shops that are bringing in jobs from all kinds of clients, where they need to have all the same fonts their clients are using, including Typekit access as part of Creative Cloud, takes away so many headaches. Because now you can just look, you can search for the font that you're supposed to have in a project that your client forgot to give you. You can see that it's available through Typekit. You just go, okay, you click on it, and it downloads and installs, and you're using it. It takes away the headache of calling a client and saying you didn't include the fonts. They don't know how to give them to you.
Right.
Or they don't send you the right versions. You just grab it, and you go. Yeah,
that's fantastic from the print house viewpoint.
Right.
But that doesn't represent the majority of Adobe's users. I mean, you know, and it doesn't address what's going to be an increasing mix, which is people that don't need a print house.
Right. But then you also have the professional designers that are making projects for their clients, and the client says, hey, I want a font that looks kind of like this, and you don't have it.
That's true. It does.
And now you just go get the font. And before, for the designers, they would work with a limited set of fonts, or they had to charge their clients a lot of money to go buy fonts for them.
Right.
So the Typekit thing, I think, for designers and print production people has the potential to be a very big thing. I know a lot of people that were very excited about that. But, you know, it just... I think that Adobe could have presented Creative Cloud in a more palatable way to its users.
And I think that they need to... understanding that subscription revenue is fantastic for them. And also, by the way, let's point out another obvious thing here. For many people, $50 a month is a lot easier to manage, let alone swallow, than what, 25? How much was...
So if you're buying the Master Suite, $2,600.
Yeah, but no one needs the Master Suite.
Okay, so if you're buying... we'll go with design and web.
And I say no one needs the Master Suite because very few people are doing print and web and design and illustration and movie production and music recording. Just no one's doing that. No one's doing all those things.
True. Although there's this horrible trend where companies are hiring designers, expecting them to be able to do all that.
Yeah, fair enough.
But that'll be another show. Okay, so let's go with design and web.
Yep.
And brand new, that is $1,900.
Right. So $50 a month is a lot better. A lot easier to manage $2,000. Than $2,000 up front, especially if you're an independent.
Yes. And right? Yeah, and back in the days when I was consulting for the graphic design industry all those years ago in a past life, the number of designers that I was helping that were stressed every single time I would talk to them because they didn't know where the money was going to come from to buy the next version. Right. Or if they were working for a company that they could use the company license at home, but they knew that they were going to freelance at some point, and then they couldn't use a company license.
Right,
they're freaking out because that's a lot of money that they had to come up with just right off the bat, just to be able to keep doing their job.
Right,
$50 is a lot more affordable.
Right, it is a lot more affordable, but. There are many people who chafe at the notion of renting their software. And I don't think this is just an issue that, you know, oh my God, you shouldn't spring this on me and you should give me time to adapt. I understand resistance to change.
Yeah, there are people that just simply have no interest in a rental software model, period.
Yeah, especially with Adobe, when there are times when you don't want to upgrade because you don't want the changes in what they're doing. That applies to a lot of people. And those people are much more comfortable with the notion of buying a license, a perpetual license, and sticking with that until they choose to upgrade, even if they would have saved money the other way.
Now, okay, and this takes us back to a problem I mentioned earlier, which is people that are using Creative Cloud are shutting off the auto updates because they don't want to risk breaking anything.
Right.
And they also know that they're working with people that are frozen in time with a perpetual license version they bought. They can't risk compatibility issues there either.
Right.
And that's not going to change anytime soon. Because the number of people that are out there, you know, the serious professionals that are using Creative Suite 5, 5, 5, and 6 right now, that number is not going to drop anytime soon, I think.
Right. Especially now.
Yeah. So we will still have this problem where people are freezing their apps at a certain version, and they're not installing the updates because they can't risk compatibility problems.
Right.
Creative Cloud isn't going to fix that. As much as Adobe would love that and touts that as a feature, that's not really going to happen.
All right. So we've been going on about this for a long time. Let me bring us to a close with a couple of observations. First of all, you did a killer piece explaining what Creative Cloud is and is not.
Thank you.
For instance, one of the things it is not is moving your apps to the cloud. It's actually moving licensing to the cloud.
Right.
It's not moving your apps to the cloud. So you're not using web apps. It's not Photoshop in a browser. And Jeff explained all this, and he explained what it is and what it isn't. And his original coverage of the changes that you're getting is also fantastic. We're going to have links to both of those pieces in the show notes.
That's right.
And in like 15 seconds or less, what is your opinion of this move to Creative Cloud only? Summarize it for us.
Totally expected, just not quite so soon. And it does have some potential benefits for actually a lot of users, but we're still at a point in the market where a perpetual license makes sense for a lot of Adobe's customers.
Not even less than 15 seconds. And my 15-second summation is that this is another example of a company that makes decisions based on its needs rather than trying to provide the best solution for customers, and I don't like it. So there we have it.
Have we both came in under 15 seconds?
We did.
Which for us is crazy because we can't keep a show down to an hour.
It's true. Kathy, imagine how long it would take if we actually had software or audio monitoring. true story, folks. If we can hear ourselves, so when we record this, while we are virtually in TMO Towers West, technically.
Well, you're in West. I'm in Central.
Well, yeah, that's.
Oh no. For the visual, I actually grab my laptop and walk over to the West Tower that Brian's in.
Exactly,
because that's where our studios are.
Exactly, because we of course are in a studio together, which means we're not. And so we're listening to each other over Skype, and we're both recording locally, and then Jeff sends me his audio, and I mix it in Logic because I'm a audio snob, and I want everything to sound really good, and I want it to sound like we're both in the same studio together, right?
Because
so that's what we do.
We are.
Because we are. And with GarageBand Logic, I guess Jeff is recording with GarageBand.
Right.
You can listen to yourself while you're being recorded. But you get the slightest of delays. It's a little bit different when you're playing, like if you're just recording locally. Anyway, the point is this. With that slightest of delays for both Jeff and I, we start talking slower and slower and slower and slower as we try to match the delay in our ears.
And then the stuttering begins.
It's totally true. It's totally true. So that to me is amusing, and hopefully you like. You know what? I should just cut all that out, shouldn't I?
Yeah.
All right. So let's move on to our other topic. Our other topic is Apple and its own narrative and whether or not it lost control.
Right. And for those of you that are right now going, huh, because you're listening to your own monitor, what Brian's talking about is Apple's control over the message it's feeding out through the media.
Right. And about a month ago, I started thinking about it. I mean, I don't think I actually mentioned it until about 2 weeks ago. But about a month ago, I've been thinking about the fact that Apple had lost control of that narrative, that Apple was... Yeah, and by the narrative we mean the story that's being told about Apple by the world, by the press, by pundits, by analysts, by everybody. And since September and the release of iOS 6 and iPhone 5 and Apple Maps in particular, that set of events, Apple seems to have lost control of that narrative. And I talked about it in the towers. I actually got some pushback, which meant that it's probably something I should write about. Mm-hmm. And then before I could, because I delayed, Ben Reitzes over at Barclays put out a research note saying that Apple was in the process of regaining that control. And he actually used the term to retake control of the narrative. And great minds. And so I wrote a piece arguing that Ben was right, or that if Ben is right, it means that Apple has lost control, and here's why Apple has lost control.
Which fits in nicely with your feeling that Apple did lose control of that narrative.
Right. It was the excuse to finally write about that. It's the spark that I needed. And I think that there are some very specific reasons why this has happened. One, for the last, really since the iPod was released, accelerating with the release of iTunes, and then, of course, iPod for Windows and iTunes for Windows. From that point on, the Apple narrative was always about what's Apple going to do next.
Right.
We had a steady diet of leaks and rumors, and those leaks and rumors for the last, I would say, 2 years of Steve Jobs' life, those rumors became increasingly accurate. Those leaks became increasingly accurate.
Which tells me that Apple was seeding information to select media outlets.
Yeah, you know, they were, but I don't think that's the reason why. I think the reason why is because Apple became worth so much money. There was money to be made by ferreting out sources in Apple's supply chain. Because Apple wasn't ceding anything to DigiTimes, and DigiTimes went from being a joke to being usually pretty accurate.
Okay,
not always.
Yeah, there is that. I was thinking like the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal, but right. You're right. There's a lot of other places that were getting really accurate information.
Yeah, and the hedge funds, of course, were all, you know, the hedge funds were bloody well paying. Who's the guy that got arrested?
Oh.
You covered that for us.
I did, and I can't think of his name. And in the end, he rolled over and just laid out the whole sordid thing about the meetings and restaurants and bags
right.
of money.
He worked for Apple.
And yeah, he was a mid-level money. Manager in charge of acquiring specific parts through the Pacific Rim supply chain.
And he was being hired by hedge funds to set up meetings with those suppliers. Am I getting those details right?
Yeah, that's pretty much it. Or he was acting as the go-between for the information.
And so, you know, he was basically taking money to arrange leaks to hedge funds, and the hedge funds were trading on that information. It's just highly illegal.
Oh,
and extraordinarily unscrupulous and unethical to boot. Not only on his part, but the hedge funds' part, let alone the suppliers' part. Every player involved, unethical, morally bankrupt.
And everyone knew what they were doing was not only philosophically wrong, but very, very criminally wrong, too.
Yes. So, but the reason why that was possible is because Apple was making so much money, so much profit, the stock was rising so high, there was lots of money to be made on the stock market by having the right information, some of which was illegally gained. And I believe that I mean, you know, plus at the same time, Apple supply chain is growing so big. You know, it's just so huge. There were too many people involved for the company to keep the same level of secrecy that had been working for Apple since Steve came back in 1997.
Yeah. Apple became a colossus. And its supply chain equally so.
Right. But there's roughly a million people making stuff for Apple.
Yeah. And of those million people, there are, even if it's 1% that's willing to give information for notoriety or money, that's a lot of people giving out information.
If it's 0.1%, that's a lot of people.
Yeah.
You know, and that's one reason why those leaks became so accurate, is there were too many people involved, and there was too much money at stake. There were lots of resources that could be brought to bear in extracting that information. And so what's my point here? The Apple narrative was all about what Apple is going to do next. Especially, oh my goodness, when 2007 the iPhone comes out and just changes, you know, it just changes everything. And you know, since then it was a media frenzy from 2007 until the fall of 2012. It was really a love fest for Apple.
It was, and the way people were just going over all this information and all these rumors and all these leaks, it was like a piranha-infested lake.
Yes, a Rana infested lake. That's a good term for it. And cut to... No, don't cut yet. Look at Apple's strategy during that entire time. Apple's strategy was secrets. We don't talk. We don't comment. The PR department largely didn't answer requests for comment on a large variety of issues.
On pretty much everything.
Pretty much everything. And as I said, I don't know how many times I said this to you, Jeff, but Apple's PR department was in this extremely unique position. Every other company on the planet, their PR company's job is to get people to say something, right? You know, get some people to say something about their company.
Right.
Apple's PR department's job was to try to control what you said.
Right.
And that worked. That worked when the narrative was all about what Apple is going to do next. But now, so now we cut to the fall of 2012. Apple releases the iPhone 5. It's seen as somewhat disappointing by some folks, even though lots of people bought it. Apple releases iOS 6 that includes Apple Maps, which replaces Google Maps. And it was a botched rollout.
Right.
And Apple got all sorts of criticism. And at the same time, Apple also had just... So Apple like updated the introduced a new 13-inch Retina display MacBook Pro.
Right.
Updated the MacBook Airs. Updated the MacBook Pro 15-inch. iMacs were introduced, although they didn't really start shipping until late December. Somewhat late in December, but then really in January. And the Mac Mini was updated. Apple TV was not, I guess, updated.
Although it did get software updates. Did you mention iPad Mini?
The iPad Mini got updated. The iPad itself got updated. The iPod Touch was updated. And, of course, the iPhone 5 was released. So Apple pretty much updated
the entire product line.
In the space of a couple of weeks. It was insane that Apple was able to do so with as few problems as it had. Is a testament to Tim Cook's operational extraordinary abilities.
Yeah. Yes. It was like every morning when I'd sit down at my desk, there was a new Apple thing for a couple weeks. Every single day, there was something new. Some days, multiple things.
Right. Two media events. We had the Mac media event. We had the iPhone media event.
Right.
And so, of course, the flip side of that is that when you update everything at once, it's going to be a while before anything else gets updated.
Right. And based on what Tim Cook said during the quarterly conference call, we're looking at fall.
Right. Yeah, we're going to see something at WWDC. That's my guess.
Well, okay. We know we're going to see iOS 7, and we know we're going to see OS 10 10.9 because in the press release, there's a quote from Phil Schiller mentioning those things.
Right. So, I bet we get some kind of hardware. I just don't know what.
Yeah, I don't know what. And I'm not expecting it to be a replacement upgrade, whatever, for the Mac Pro.
Oh, I wish.
I think it would be awesome. But I think with Tim saying wait till fall for stuff, that we may be waiting till fall for that too. I would like to be wrong, though.
You know, if Apple doesn't hurry up and release the Mac Pro, I'm going to get old enough to finally come to grips with the fact that I really don't need one.
Yeah.
All right. So.
Yeah.
So you have this dearth of new product announcements, not because, as some people have said, oh, my God, no new product announcement. Apple has lost its mojo. It's so ridiculous. It's so ridiculous it makes me want to start punching people. We have no new product announcements because everything was just updated. It's only been – right now, as of this writing, it's been 7 months or less than 7 months since everything was updated.
Right. And expecting Apple to release a brand new major update to the iPad or iPhone every 6 months, no, that's not going to happen.
I'll be honest. I thought Apple might have been throwing down the gauntlet to competitors by going to a 6-month cycle, but so far they haven't, and it doesn't look like it will. And that's beside the point. So they haven't released anything. There's this dearth of new product announcements. There was also heaps of criticism about Apple Maps and about the fact that Siri doesn't do everything on the planet. And what happened is that all these reporters in particular who are on the Apple beat went from having what's Apple going to do next stories to write to needing to find stories. And they went digging for problems, and they found problems.
Well, sure. I mean, any company that's as big as Apple, and to be fair, based on money, well, there aren't any bigger right now. You're going to find problems. That's just simply how it works. That doesn't mean the company is doomed to failure. It doesn't mean that Tim Cook doesn't have control. You'll edit that out and make me sound smart.
Yes, I will. Trust me.
What it means is that Apple is a big company, and no company is perfect. And when a company gets big enough, you will find problems, period.
Right. And Apple is working on stuff out of the public eye, just like it always has. But
so people make stuff up.
And people have always made stuff up, but it's always been about what Apple is going to do next. And in the middle of all this, we have a PR department whose job has never been to reach out, whose job has never been to cultivate stories with a lot of reporters. Apple certainly does work with some reporters. There's a pretty short list. One of the things I was going to joke about in my article about this was that if you find someone who says that they have a good relationship with Apple, they're either one of five people or they're a liar.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. You know, no one likes working with that. Very few people like working with Apple's PR department because it's difficult, because their job is not to give access, not to answer questions. Their job is to control. And again, this is unique in the world of PR, at least in technology, you know, the technology yeah. industry. So Apple was not set up to deal with this confluence of events that has happened over the last several months, where you don't have the new product announcements and you have all this criticism about what's going on. Steve Jobs, of course, died a year and a half ago. And so, you know, that is an extra unique confluent event. And can I say confluent event?
You just did, so we'll roll with it.
Excellent. Kick butt. In that process, the result of all of this is that Apple lost control of that narrative. And what the Apple narrative became about was the mistakes, about the lack of innovation, which is just ridiculous. The problems with John Browett having to fire Scott Forstall. The negative things and negative speculation, and people who have never understood Apple had just, as you earlier said, just made stuff up.
Yeah, and since we didn't have new products rolling out, we didn't have that, I'll call it the natural reset of the news and rumor cycle.
Right.
Because everything would build up, and typically once a quarter, we'd have something that would give us that release, and then the cycle would start over again. And now we've gone about 7 months without having something happen that gives us the reset.
Right. The increased dividend did so a little bit. We've actually seen a rebound in the stock price.
True.
In the last 2 weeks.
True. I think our release that gives us our reset point happens on June 10th, which is the keynote day for Worldwide Developers Conference.
Right. And even that could end up being seen as disappointing. There would be people that are looking for some kind of new hardware announcement, even though Tim told us to look to the fall, because even people like me, I think that there will be some device that is upgraded or announced at WWDC.
You know, every year.
And I know better.
Yeah, you know better, because Apple doesn't do that. That's not what WWDC keynote is for.
Yeah, it has been. It has been for a long time. That's not what I meant. I mean, I know better because Tim just told us to wait till the fall.
Yeah, he told us to wait till the fall. And Apple tends to focus more on software during that keynote event than hardware. And every year, people are expecting a huge revamp of the entire product line, brand new hardware, a completely new market that Apple's going to revolutionize. And that doesn't happen at that keynote.
Right.
And Apple uses other keynote events, or you know, media events, for those things.
Was that Epic Thunder I heard?
Yes. Yes.
Ooh, awesome band name, Epic Thunder.
Yeah. Yeah.
Playing all the best hair metal.
I know. You should see our drummer.
Fantastic. All right. We've been going on for a while now.
Of course we have, because that's what we do.
That is what we do. That is our job. Long story short, I think that Apple has lost control of the narrative, but I think that it can and will regain it. I also think that Apple's PR department has been adjusting to changing circumstances, not only changing circumstances in management, right? There's a new guy at the top.
Yes.
But also to the reality that they were getting a lot of negative press. I think that Apple has shown some signs of reaching out more to more mainstream reporters. And I think that that evolution will continue in the PR department. Some very, very smart and capable and talented people in the department. That's for absolutely sure. And that we're going to see Apple regain that narrative, control of that narrative, just as Ben Rita said. I think he was spot on that.
Yep, I think he nailed it. And I think that your perspective on it has been totally spot on too.
Ah, oh, thank you, man. Aren't you the best?
Well, you know.
So, I guess that's it, isn't it?
I think so.
All right. Take us out.
I can do that. And that's this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, write us at acm@macobserver.com. Thanks for listening, and feel free to follow me on Twitter or app.net. My name on both is Jay Gamet.
You can follow me on Twitter at TMOBrian. That's Brian with a Y. On app.net, I am Brian Chaffin. That's also with a Y. Our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer. That's me and Jeff. And our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly. The bass is by Boom. That's recorded just for us. And that's all for this week.
And as always, stay subscribed.
We'll see you online at the Mac Observer.